Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
All right, hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek From the Holodeck. This is the Discovery Edition, and I am Michael Flores, your host, and I'm cruising at a cool 9.9. Warp, 9.9, Dave, in case you didn't know what I was talking about.
Oh, thank God.
If I cross over to 10, I'm going to end up turning to a lizard like Tom Paris.
Exactly.
So I want to pull back. Just 9.9, that's it.
I definitely
don't want to have babies with you.
No. That'd be just terrible.
I don't want, you know, people finding us on a planet mutated into lizards. And that, we suddenly fucked and had children. So please, 9.9. That's the fastest I go. All right. So you and I, Dave, are here today talking and discussing Discovery episode 5 of season 3 titled Die Trying.
I know this gets old, dude, but this is now my favorite episode.
Every episode is your new favorite episode, Dave.
Every episode keeps getting better and better. And I'm like going, what the hell?
Well, you know what, Dave? I like to hear this excitement from you. I'm like, David, calm down. That's typically. I'm like, David, bring it down. You're at a 10. Let's bring it down to a 2. But with all the negativity nowadays, and the trolls that are still trying to convince people that Discovery is not good, I'm okay with your enthusiasm. I welcome your deep belly laughs of enjoyment and enthusiasm for Star Trek Discovery.
Because it just feels good.
It does. And Burnham this season is just so hot. Is it the eye makeup as well?
I have no idea.
She's wearing like eyeliner this season too. So I'm like, damn, girl.
I'm like, wait, what did Sonequa Martin Green do?
Well, she's always been pretty attractive, but this season, she's up there with 7 of 9. I'm just going to say it.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, Book, you better fucking get out the way. All right, so every episode, Dave, I do agree with you, is getting better and better.
It's getting better and better.
This episode was astonishing. From the writing to directing to cinematography, everything worked seamlessly together to create an episode of Trek that was uniquely different, but also familiar in all the right ways.
Yeah. And even down to the acting, dude. The acting in this one, I think they've leapt leaps and bounds from what they've done in the past couple episodes, even down past season 2.
Oh, without a doubt, Dave. That's what Discovery is doing this season, though. Like, it's still its own unique show, but it's more familiar, Dave. That's why it's better than season 2, even though we love season 2. And that's why it's better than season 1. They are keeping to similar themes and moods that we, as Star Trek fans, are more accustomed to. And let's be honest, that we're more comfortable with. As Star Trek fans, we have a very we're very particular.
Particular, yeah.
And we feel comfortable with what they're doing with season 3. It's all the right things without retreading, without trying to redo things we've seen before. But also, they're giving us the right amounts of things that we do expect from Star Trek. We still have those serious, darker tones, but they are meshed more evenly within the story.
And they don't seem that jarring, especially jumping from scene to scene. Like, in particular, Georgiou's scenes. You go from, like, almost partly comedic, partly dark comedic, to suddenly, like, this... You cut to the hallway scene with her and Burnham, and it's suddenly, like, this dead serious tone, like a reality just set in.
You know what, Dave? I wasn't going to get into it yet, Dave, but you are right about Georgiou and the comedic tone. That's how they're making this character work. you ask, well, how the fuck do you make a murderer, the Empress of the Terran Empire, work in as part of the crew of a Federation Starfleet ship? Well, you give her a personality, number one.
Number one, yes.
And she has a very dark sense of humor. And because she has a dark sense of humor, it brings levity.
Yeah.
To the show when we need it. And it works for a character who's a Terran. Absolutely works. Michelle Paradise is doing a great job staying true to the show's theme of the season. That's something we have continued to mention, and we will continue to bring to the attention of our listeners as critics of television and lovers of Star Trek. She's staying true to those themes, which is hope. Hope has arrived.
Yes.
Optimism. That was the guiding theme for this entire episode. Again, we have a ship that's filled with a crew of individuals that look upward, as they said, optimistic, that have been transported to a time where the Federation still stands for goodness, but they are in darker times.
Yeah.
And they don't have the luxury, as the Admiral had said, to look upward.
Exactly.
And that's where this ship and her crew will find its relevance and purpose.
This was actually one of the things I really liked about it. Like, up to this point, just what, like what you said, the theme of optimism and hope has been front and center. This is the first episode where it gets challenged.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where the crew is forced to basically face some realities, which I really enjoy, because it's good to be optimistic. The thing that I think they were trying to put out there with this particular episode, it's good to be optimistic. Mm-hmm. But do not stick your head in the sand. Don't be oblivious. And like, it was amazing to me, because I thought that that whole moment would be like saved for characters like Tilly or Saru, even mm-hmm. to some degree. But in all honesty, the characters they chose was really surprising. Georgiou was the biggest one.
Yeah, well, we needed to find her purpose.
You need to find her purpose, her motivation.
I don't think it was an issue this season so far by any means, but closing in on episode 5, we needed to make sure we found a spot for her, because she was the only character so far that was her and the Braavan. Is that the name of the alien species?
Yes, the Braavan.
Commander Nahn. Her and Nahn were the only two characters that we still don't know a whole lot about. Yes, we know we know Georgiou, but this season there doesn't seem to be, so far up to this point, you know, a lot for her to do, except for her connection to Burnham. And we definitely see in this episode that that's going to change really quick here.
And I just want to say right now, my favorite cameo in Star Trek and all the series so far, in even down to season 1 and 2.
Yeah.
My favorite celebrity cameo is now here. And it mattered. Like, choosing that scene with Georgiou acting opposite David Cronenberg. The way David Cronenberg acts, you'd expect that. For people that basically don't know who David Cronenberg is, he is a fantastic filmmaker.
Why are you wearing glasses? Dude, I fucking loved that.
I loved
dude.
It.
Yeah.
And like, David Cronenberg is so deadpan that he has this weird energy that basically he can take a—
oh, I love that you said weird energy.
He has a weird energy that basically he's able to be in a scene that should be levity, but David Cronenberg just twists it.
Yeah.
And like, well, him acting opposite Georgiou was brilliant.
And we'll talk about it a little bit later after our break here, but I do agree with you. That whole scene with David Cronenberg and I forgot her name in real life.
Jesus. Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh. It was fucking awesome.
It was freaking phenomenal.
It was probably one of the best acting scenes we've had in the entire 3 seasons. And that's saying a lot, because we've had some great acting moments.
Oh, we've had great acting moments, but this one is arguably my favorite. You have David Cronenberg taking basically—
People think acting is Joaquin Phoenix in Joker.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong.
It is to some degree.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Bryan Cranston said in an interview once when he was trying to be, you know, he was trying to be humble about his performance in Breaking Bad. He's all, you know what? Bad guys get all the credit. You give us a bad guy role and we're going to win Oscars.
Yeah.
We're going to win Emmys because being bad. And he says, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easy. But you give someone a good guy role or you give someone a subtle scene to just act and not be crazy or a lunatic. And suddenly it becomes a lot harder.
Yes.
And he's all, those are the real actors. That's what he said. And that scene between Giorgio and I believe his name was Kovich. Was that the name of the character?
Yep.
It was acting because it was all subtle. It was all nuance. So, Dave, this episode was everything. Discovery pulled into the Federation headquarters and the crew was smiling ear to ear with excitement, fanboying, fangirling, fantrilling. That was all of us, Dave.
Yeah.
So excited to see all the new ship designs, Voyager J. I believe there was a USS Nog.
Yes, I was so excited to see that.
Because ships with holographic parts. I mean, Dave, this is what we've been wanting. What we just witnessed, Dave, was Star Trek TNG Episode 1, where we went from the original series and everything we know of ship design and motif and production design, and suddenly we leap forward into this utopian version, this futuristic look of TNG. Do you remember how shocked we were? It was good.
It was good.
It was so different. And now here we are with Discovery doing the exact same thing. Those are the same feelings I got.
Even down to the uniforms, dude, when they got to finally see the Federation uniforms that they wear.
Yeah.
I was like going, this is really cool because it feels different. It feels like they leapt forward. It's a different time.
We're learning something new, David. Like, this is what we've been saying for how fucking long. I feel like we're the only Star Trek fans that say, let's fucking move forward. Enough of the goddamn prequels. Do you remember that rumor that we were getting a prequel of a prequel of a reboot? Prequel,
yes.
And I flipped the fuck out in the middle of a show. I'm like, wait a second. We're getting a prequel of a reboot.
Yeah.
Enough.
Enough.
We need to move fucking forward.
And not only that, move forward in natural progression, because I don't know if you picked this up.
Yeah.
But like when I saw the uniforms of the new Federation.
Yeah.
They looked more militaristic, mm-hmm. like what you would expect when they start getting into Deep Space Nine territory, Voyager.
Right, yeah.
And it looks more corporate now. Like it's like treated like a business.
Corporate science a bit.
Corporate science.
That's kind of what I got, like corporate science.
Yeah. And it's more like a business. You're like in an office and everyone's mm-hmm. dressed in a suit now.
Yeah.
And I really like that progression because we go from – you know, the original series where it's like high fantasy, you got the spandex, you got really crazy skin tight outfits and everything. Then you go to TNG where it's more progressive and it's less.
I do miss those. I miss those skin tight ones. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. They were awesome.
Can we put Burnham in a 7 of 9 costume?
Oh, my God. Just for an episode. No. Put her in David, just original series. Oh, David, original series.
David, you're messing up my fantasy here. Shh. Go ahead.
But like the fact that one of the weirdest questions I had in my brain for Discovery mm-hmm. as a Star Trek fan was like, what does the Federation physically look like? What do Federation officers physically look like 3,000 years into the future?
They float and they have bald heads.
Yeah, I was like going, are they going to be like totally different? Or, and then all of a sudden, no, they look more corporate and they look more business-like. They essentially look downgraded.
Yeah.
They're not military anymore. And I'm like, oh, this makes sense.
Yeah, it works. I feel like a lot of thought went into what they wanted to do with the designs of everything. And that's why I kind of feel bad for the production designers, the costumers, and the visual effects guys, because they take so much shit from some of the trolls that they don't fuck. They're like, oh, they don't fucking care about what become what of what came before. And that's like, that couldn't be farther from the truth. There's a video that we'll get into, an interview that they did with the visual effects guy, one of the key visual effects coordinators, I believe, that works on Discovery. And it's a little interview, about 3 minutes between him and Will Wheaton, and they talk about the design. And the guy stresses the importance of doing it right.
Yes.
And making sure the fans are happy with the design. And I love how gracious he was, because we've all heard certain directors and writers on other shows and movies that are doing reboots of famous franchises or sequels, and they straight up say, listen, I don't give a fuck what the fans think. I'm doing my thing. At least these people do care. To hear these members of the production staff say, oh, nothing was more important to me than just fucking getting it right.
Yeah.
That, and you feel that, though, in season three. If you let go of your expectations as some of the Star Trek fans who just want everything to be like TNG or what came before, if they just let it go and see what they're giving us, they would be able to enjoy how great this series really is. So much fun. So much Trek. And the crew was a little podunk, Dave. This episode, a little Captain Archer-ish, a little bit.
When it makes sense.
It does, but they were just as podunk as Archer was. When they're flying into Federation headquarters, they were out.
Look at that ship over there. We're Starfleet.
Look, their name. I think it was like there was a line that someone said, their nacelles aren't even connected.
Yeah, that dude, I think that was Dittmer. I think she orgasmed.
And I was like going, my God. They've all turned into Archer.
Ooh, a starship.
A starship.
My father was a captain. He gave me a remote control spacecraft I flew as a child.
That's why a lot of Star Trek fans, especially Discovery fans, I noticed, did not like Vance, but played by Oded.
He's such a good actor, dude.
But like so many Discovery fans automatically didn't like Vance, because Vance was like looking at them like how me and you would look at Archer and go, you guys are so podunk. What the hell? Are you serious?
Look at you guys.
Look at you guys. What is this?
Where are you guys from? Jesus. Calm the fuck down.
And like, dude, Oded Fehr is awesome. I thought that was a good choice.
Such a great casting. I am so happy that he's the admiral right now. He's really good. He does not get enough work either, that guy. All right, so live read time, David. Get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. That's right. Get more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions every single month when you pledge $5 or more a month. We have behind-the-scenes tiers where you get all of our pre-shows that we do before our shows. Bonus shows, bonus discussions, plus with the $5 tier, you get the podcast option, where you get 2 full additional podcasts every single month, all when you pledge and you help us. So if you want to help us stay on the air and keep us doing these shows, it's the only way we can survive, especially with all the corporate podcasts out there today. And I mean, all the algorithms are designed to favor those bigger shows with celebrity hosts. It's a little bit harder for us to cut through. So patreon.com/Rainman Digital, pledge. All right, Dave, let's start with that David Cronenberg guest spot. What the fuck, dude? Did anybody hear about this? Did anybody hear about this? Did you hear about this?
No, I did not. This caught me so off guard because when I was first watching this, I had to rewind. And I'm like, who the hell is playing that character? And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's David Cronenberg.
It took me a while. I recognized him, but I'm like, wait a second. I love Cronenberg. He's one of my favorite directors. History of Violence, fucking amazing. Fly,
Scanners.
Scanners. Dude. I mean, just an amazing talent. But as a director, he's aged. You know, he's been around for a very long time. And I'm like, who is this guy? This guy looks really familiar. And then suddenly, in the middle of his discussion with George, I'm like, holy shit, that's Cronenberg.
David Cronenberg. And I'm telling you, perfect choice to actually play opposite Giorgio. And if what a lot of fans are saying is he's the representation of Section 31, I think.
Yeah, that's what people are saying, Dave.
That a lot of people are saying that? Dude.
It has to be, though, because do you really bring in David Cronenberg? Sure, he has. If you look at his IMDb work, he has been on a bit of an acting tear over the last couple of years. A few cameos here and there. He even acted in a series for numerous episodes. But do you bring Cronenberg on for a two-bit part just for fun? Or are they doing something with this? I have to think that the way they set that entire scene up, he's involved with Section 31 somehow.
Yeah.
And we already know, Dave, and if listeners don't know, now they will also know, there is a Section 31 series in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to star Michelle Yeoh reprising a role as Georgiou. Is this the setup? Is this the direction? Now, we've been talking about this for a very long time, almost 2 years now. The Section 31 spinoff series was announced, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had assumed the spinoff would take place in the original timeline, but this would work much better because, as we've said, this needs to be the timeline. The Discovery timeline and where we're at right now needs to be the timeline for all Star Trek moving forward. Yes, we have the upcoming Pike series, Strange New Worlds. That's fine. That can be our connection to the Golden Age. But after that, that's it. And they really pushed the story forward in this area and took Georgiou's character into some interesting territory, which gave her character some purpose that we definitely needed for this season. Because if we had gone another one or two episodes without really fleshing out her purpose for the season, it would leave the series feeling a little weird.
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, right, that whole scene with Cronenberg, the one thing that I noticed was I never gave thought to Georgiou as a character to having to deal with trauma. But like once Kovich tells her, yeah, it's been 500 years since we've interacted with the mirror universe. Plus, on the flip side of that, the fact that he basically doesn't even react to when she tells him that she's from the mirror universe.
She doesn't like to look vulnerable, right? Or show emotion.
And suddenly you see it in Georgiou's face that basically something's off about this guy.
Well, something's going on with her too. So,
yeah.
Dave, let's go, before you get into that, let's go one by one and then jump in as we go through this, okay?
Okay.
Because this whole scene did a lot and said a lot. So let's go through this one by one. The character Kovich who was interrogating Georgiou was very familiar with the Terran timeline.
Terran timeline.
Over the last 900 years or so, we get the idea that the Federation, or at least Section 31, we can assume, right? We can assume that was Section 31, right?
Oh, absolutely. The way he was dressed.
So we can assume that they've learned a lot about the mirror universe or the mirror timeline, whatever you want to call it at this point. It seemed like they had even done extensive investigations. They knew more than they should. They even knew how to scan for Terrans, which means they understand the subtle differences in their biology now. He knew about their versions of first contact, April 5th, 2063.
2063.
When they killed the Vulcans instead of making peace with them during first contact, which we saw that actual scene during the last several episodes of the final season of Enterprise.
Yes, we did.
Which was honestly some really good episodes.
Well, dude, me and you have stated that it's one of our favorite visuals of Enterprise is the scene where they have the scene play out like in First Contact.
It's exactly like
First Contact.
They even start off with the song.
And instead, he pulls out a gun and then shoots the Vulcan. And they all charge into the ship. And I'm like going, that had to be the one of the weirdest.
It was funny.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
You were actually giggling.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was very off-putting and purposely so. They did it on purpose. So he knew about the fall of the Empire as well, which we had also seen in episodes of Deep Space Nine. They had mentioned that Spock's involvement from the original series, who took the advice of, I believe, the Kirk of our timeline, and he went back and tried to make reforms within the Terran Empire that ultimately led to them losing power.
Yes.
So Of course, Georgia would not be privy to that, as her time was before Emperor Spock.
Yes.
So he knew about that. He knew that their empire had fallen. The distance between the prime and mirror universes seemed to have been expanding for centuries, making crossovers nearly impossible. He also claimed that no one has crossed over in 500 years.
Yeah.
Does that kind of sum up that scene in terms of plot?
Pretty much.
Facts?
Yes. Those were the straight facts that Giorgio finds out. And it's as he's talking, it's interesting watching Giorgio's reaction, because suddenly she goes from a very confident character mm-hmm. to suddenly she's shaken. Like something bothers her.
Well, this all served as well-needed character development for Giorgio. I don't believe the writers have lost sight of her, but no. It was time to give her a bit more purpose, and that's what this moment did. And the way the scene played out, as you mentioned, there was a battle of minds.
Yes.
During this interrogation. And in the end, it showed that Kovich had the upper hand, and he was able to make Giorgio crack. He saw through her cracks. There is obviously something going on with her. First off, biologically, there's something going wrong with her physically, but also traumatically, psychologically, there's something going wrong
with her.
Right. So there's a lot not right with her right now. And that's the first time we actually had seen any allusions to this. She is you get the sense that she probably figured that someday she would get back to her universe and maybe even her timeline. But think about it. Now that time travel's banned. Number one, there is no way to travel in time. And number two, the gap between their universes have moved so far apart that they can't even cross over now if they wanted to.
So she's essentially stuck.
So now she's stuck. So there was a part of her that probably thought she would always go back to what she's familiar with. And when she finds out that she can't, that affects her. And I like that, because that brings a bit of realism to her. So far, we've seen someone who's not very vulnerable. She's larger than life. She is the emperor of a galaxy. And her only weakness that we know of is Burnham. And that's fine. And that works. I've said that time and time again, that that's the perfect way to create some type of empathy for a character like this. You got to give them redeeming qualities. Otherwise, as Star Trek fans, we sit and wonder why we give a shit about someone who is a mass murderer, essentially. How do we care about her? Well, we see better sides of her. We see her making right decisions, all in the name of caring for someone. And sure enough, Kovich even brings that up.
Yeah.
To solidify that thought. He wants to know why someone of her caliber, someone from the Terran Empire, someone who was an emperor, why would she stay here? Why would she be willing to travel into the future and work with these people? What does she gain? And what does he surmise? That there's someone on the ship.
There's someone on the ship. And like, it really brought forth the idea that me and you have been discussing, is like, Burnham is unfortunately the weakness of Giorgio's, because by all Terran standards,
it also keeps her in check though, too, as a character. It's a great writing gimmick.
But by all Terran standards, that weakness is a huge thing. In Terran Empire, you are not supposed to show weakness. And if you show weakness, you need to eliminate it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, for me, the way I saw it is Giorgio coming to terms with the fact that technically she shouldn't feel like this if she's a Terran. What the hell's going on?
As we progress further into her story, Dave, and we obviously have to set the stage for her own series, the Section 31 series, we have to start fixing her character. And I don't want to say start, because I think they have been, in terms of how do you course correct a character who's a Terran Emperor? Well, they have been working on it since season 2, and it's worked. I have no problems. I actually love everything they've done with her.
Oh, dude, yeah.
And the relationship between her and Burnham, it definitely hits me in the feels. I get it. The bond between a mother and a daughter, losing a daughter but finding her again in a different version. Someone you might even admire, but you don't want to admit it because she represents everything you're not. there's so much going on within so subtext, and that's why that relationship for me works so well. So, but moving forward, we got to start making things a little more tangible when it comes to her character. And what they're doing with her is they're making things very clear. And you're going to see someone who is possibly fighting internally with who she wants to be and who she's becoming. She wants to be the Emperor. She wants to be someone who's feared. She wants to live wild and crazy. But unexpectedly, she finds herself fitting in with these people. Like that dinner they had with Saru. She enjoyed herself, even though she made jokes and she comes off as she's too good for this. She's there for a reason. There's no reason for her to sit there with them.
Yeah.
She's starting to enjoy herself. She's starting to like these people, and that probably bothers her.
Because it goes against her natural instincts.
Exactly. And now we have something really interesting they're doing. There's something going on with her biologically or physically as well. And I'm wondering if it has something to do with the rift between the universes drifting further apart. Something to do with the biology of the body not being 100% compatible with the physics of the prime timeline. And it might have been okay with their bodies or for their bodies when the two realities were much closer. But maybe possibly now her body is being undone some way. As we know, based on the original series, as well as what we saw with Lorca, we know that the physics of their universe is different. Look how their bodies react to light.
Yes.
So who knows what else could be at play here? Because there is something going on with her. She was like in a standing coma at one point. She seemed to be losing control of herself. She was kind of stuck when Burnham was trying to talk to her.
Yeah.
As if she didn't really know what was happening. She was silent. And for them to introduce this whole the rift being further apart, they also, if you remember, Kovic also expressed that they understand the biology of Terrans. They specifically said that we can scan for them now. And if they bring something like that to our attention, there's got to be a reason for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I really like that scene. And we touched on it at the beginning of our show, Dave, but the acting, I honestly feel like the scene between Giorgio and Kovic, probably one of the best scenes we've had.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it is my favorite scene of the entire episode. I mean, everyone else did fantastic. I mean, a lot of the characters got a chance to shine in this moment, especially when they're talking and they're doing their debriefs and stuff. I thought that was really cool. Then you get the cap to everything was Giorgio and Kovic. But even before then, like when you get the Tilly stuff and the Tig explaining what's going on is hilarious. Dude.
Is there snacks here? I need snacks. Can we get more of Tig, please?
And the thing that I like about it is the whole debriefing scene kind of unifies the crew. And the way I saw it, there's a theme. The thing I love what they've been doing in the past couple episodes is not only are they sticking to the theme of hope and optimism, but they're layering it with other themes. Like in the last episode, I was saying that I've never seen a really multi-layered story being told. And here they continue that multi-layeredness by basically not only focusing on like the hope and the hope theme that they've started from episode one, but you get like the sense, I got the sense during the debrief that they're trying to show that all the characters still have to go through this moment of grief, even though that they're optimistic and positive. Suddenly the reality is going to set in that they don't have a family anymore that's around. They've sacrificed everything to get to the future.
Listen, and David, suddenly, Burnham's the only family I need.
Well, no, Tilly.
Maybe a little. I need Tilly. Maybe a little Dittmer and Tilly on the weekends.
No. I will be happy if I could snuggle with Tilly.
No, Dave,
at night.
No.
But like with all those characters, and I like the fact that basically what the debrief scene actually made me start thinking about is, yeah, all these characters have to go through this realization that they've lost a lot to get here. And like, I started thinking about Burnham. I'm like, wait a minute. Especially with the, one of the Easter eggs that they pointed out about Spock in this episode. But like,
wait, what Easter egg? Did I miss that?
There was the Easter egg about the Draconis. It's basically deals with a story of Spock, his brain getting stolen.
Okay.
It was that one. But when I actually thought about it, it made me actually realize, what is Burnham's reaction knowing that Spock is dead and the way he does die?
Well, we're going to have to learn about that soon, right?
Yeah. And I'm like going,
David, he doesn't die though. She doesn't know.
Well, here's the thing.
Unless Section 31 in the 32nd century has found a way to figure it out.
Because obviously with Kovich, they found out a lot of stuff. They know about the mirror universe.
Exactly. If they know that much about the mirror universe, then they've got to have found out about the split timeline that was created in the Kelvin films.
And you got to realize that basically when Burnham finds out that Spock is dead, we're coming from a second season.
David, she already knows he's dead. It's been 1,000 years.
Well, not only, but the way that basically we jump, I mean, by the end of the second season, we see that the relationship Burnham gains with Spock is so touching to her that it tears her apart to leave him behind.
David, listen, if Michael Chabon didn't find it important, then I don't think Burnham will find it important to address.
You never know. But hey, Discovery's better.
And it's
Michelle Paradise versus Michael Chabon.
There's no comparison, Dave. Don't even say their names at
exactly.
the same time.
Exactly. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually bring up the fact that Burnham comes to the realization that her family, her biological family, is gone.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll get into some character development as well as a loss of a character after this break here, Dave.
Black alert. Black alert.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it, no free stuff. That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. Please find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Leave us reviews. Give us thumbs up. Make sure you share our shows. If you like our shows, give us a thumbs up. If you're on YouTube listening to us, watching us, please click the subscribe, share us, give us a thumbs up or thumbs down if you hate us. I will find you. And I will enact a swift vengeance, Dave. So yes, please help us out. All right, so this week, Dave, we lose a character, but not in a death.
Not in a death, which I really liked.
Yeah, Dave. I like that we're on the same page, Dave, because I agree. Mm-hmm. That's usually the easy way out. We have to remove a character for whatever reason. Let's just kill him. But no, through a carefully written sequence, we allow the narrative to write Commander Nahn, our head of security, out of the show in a very seamless way that worked well with pre-existing Trek canon. So through a lens of empathy, we quickly learn a bit about Nahn's past, which was needed, which this is a testament to good writing, Dave, when you can fill out a character. Oh, Jesus. Mm. Sorry, I just knocked out my microphone. What am I, new at this, Dave? I'm a rookie suddenly. When you can fill out a character's past and make them feel like they've been around for a long time in a matter of moments, by just focusing on this one character and a few key emotions, introducing an element, attach it to the character, and we have a character that feels complete. And then when they are meant to leave the show and the series, suddenly we feel a sense of sadness that someone will be missing from our crew. We don't know much about the Barzan people. I believe they were in just one episode of The Next Generation, and it was an episode that basically showed that the Barzan species relied on other planets to survive. Yeah. They weren't a self-sustained society. And that much was pretty much stated via Commander Nahn. I thought that the reveal that her people had joined the Federation and how they were directly involved with the protection of the Federation seed ship brought enough closure to a character that we were just getting to know.
Yeah.
As well. A brought a sense of, I know, I have to imagine that we'll see her again at some point. Number one.
We should. I mean, it's not like she's totally removed from the situation. She just made the decision to stay behind.
They can literally go back to the seed ship tomorrow.
Exactly.
And they have a spore drive. Yeah.
And I like that whole mini episode that was happening with Nahn, that story with Nahn and the doctor. I have to say it was actually really well done. Again, it talks about grief.
Grief, and also in terms of writing, it's just a smart way to bring back some classic Star Trek vibes where you can go on a mission, solve something, save somebody, explore, while also being connected to the direct Metharch of the season as well. It was a pretty smart call, in my opinion. And I like this aspect a lot, Dave, this entire bit, because it showed us that the Federation continued to press on the whole Barzan aspect and Commander Nahn's connection to the Barzan people.
Mm-hmm.
Adding worlds that we otherwise would just assume never joined the Federation. The same thing can be said about Saru and the Keminar joining the Federation.
Yes.
These little moments may seem irrelevant. They may seem single serving for the episode, but these moments are important because they continue to add to the success of Discovery and justifies their sacrifice. Because even though they had to go to a time that is bleak, something they probably didn't expect.
Yes.
But perhaps when you're writing this episode, I got to think the writers are hoping to give or convey this feeling that the crew will take some solace in knowing that a lot of good has also prevailed.
Yeah.
Even though they transport to a time where it's not a very great time. It's not happy. But yet to learn of the future of the Federation, that these planets, that they were both very surprised. Both Commander Nahn and Saru were both pleasantly surprised to find out that they became Federation worlds.
Yes.
And that right there should justify Saru's sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. And like, that it's all about challenging the overall theme of the season of hope and optimism, but not breaking it. And that's what I appreciate.
Yeah.
They didn't break the feeling of hope and optimism. They challenged it.
Oh, Dave, this is what we always say, isn't it? When we're defending, I'm not going to use that. No, I'm going to use the terminology that the trolls use. New Star Trek.
Yeah.
New Star Trek is what they call it. In you. I fucking hate it. It's so stupid. Non-clever and witless. But I have to justify when they do things like this. Because I feel like these moments are important because it actually strengthens Roddenberry's dream of the future.
Yeah.
You have to, in order to prove that a set of principles or ideology
is strong,
you have to challenge it.
You have to
let it prove itself, not just when times are good, not when it's just simply easy to follow the rules and do what's right, but when it's tough. And that's what Discovery has done since season one. They have challenged the principles that have been set by Gene Roddenberry in terms of how his vision of the future operates and how these people live their lives. They have challenged them so that they can then prove that it works, and thereby strengthening Roddenberry's original vision of the future.
Yes.
The human civilization, the Federation principles prevailed through time, made it through the Dominion War, the issues with Romulan, the Borg attacks, the temporal wars, and even when something threatened to destroy all of that, the Burn, the principles and the people that have been forged for centuries in this ideology still stands.
Still stands.
How is that not a statement, a powerful statement, that Roddenberry's original purpose for Star Trek still stands supreme?
Yeah. And it's not about, yes, you may have lost your numbers. There may be a few of you, but there's still that concept that still, those ideals still live on.
Right. Exactly, Dave. They might be a little down, right?
Yeah.
They might be a little down themselves. Times are tough. Nursing some wounds. But at the end of the day, it'll be about how they get back up.
Get back up.
And with the Discovery crew, they've been given a reminder. The people of this future have been given a reminder of what the classic days looked like. Wide-eyed, optimistic. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's not about the numbers. It's about, especially when you think about it. Now, let's say they did what they were starting to do with Picard. At the Federation started to make poor decisions. Right? Pulling out and not helping the Romulans.
Yeah.
I still stand by that's kind of a bad call. But I understand what they were trying to do. They were still trying to, they're trying to feed off of what Berman and Michael Piller had set up. The Federation was losing its control and power, not because of any corruption, just because things had threatened that. The Dominion War, the Borg, right? They said as much in Star Trek Nemesis and Star Trek, not Nemesis, Star Trek Insurrection.
Insurrection, yeah.
So where we got in Picard, where we saw the Federation at, does make sense. But at the end of the day, they make the right decisions. But my problem with that is that they made some poor decisions when it comes to the Romulans and not helping not helping the refugees, right?
Yeah.
Well, as long as the Burn wasn't caused by humans or the Federation, then Roddenberry's vision of the future still stands, because these are problems that were brought to them. They didn't do anything. That's why I said it's about how they stand up. It's about them standing up and how they move forward as a society. If they continue to move forward with the same principles that have governed the Federation for centuries, then nothing is wrong. No one has broken Gene Roddenberry's vision.
And that was the important part, too, that I thought, that little nuance of actually showing that Vance confirmed that they don't know how the Burn happened. It just happened.
Yeah.
And no one knows what happened. Then that, for me, just helped push that story forward. That basically, just like what you said, it's not that they caused it. It's about how they reacted to the situation.
Right. That's how you define yourself as a person. How do you react? How do you deal and heighten situations?
Yeah.
That's what defines a person's character, and that's what defines the character of the Federation, and that's what we're going to find out here in this season if people are just fucking patient.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm sorry, dude, I wasn't getting mad at you. Fuck off, Michael. Jesus. So you had brought up Admiral Vance. So there were a lot of allusions to greater threats this episode. When Admiral Vance said that, I figured that perhaps we won't learn everything about the Burn this season, because he shrugged it off and, hey, I don't know. I don't know what did it. I'm thinking it might end up being one of those underlying narrative elements that keep multiple seasons cohesive.
Yeah, especially
or connected.
Especially when they bring up the whole, I think it's the Emerald Chain. When the one officer walks up to Vance and tells him that they're having issues with that crime syndicate.
Yeah.
The Emerald Chain. I think that's going to be the underlying, or not the underlying, but the main obstacle that Discovery, the crew of the Discovery, is going to have to deal with is this Emerald Chain. Dealing with the criminal element that came in this power vacuum and made the Federation weak.
I think what we're getting here, Dave, is something along the lines of what TNG did with the ongoing Romulan threat, the brewing Klingon civil war, the Cardassian Bajoran aspect, and then, of course, with Deep Space Nine, the Dominion War and the Maquis. Those were elements that weren't resolved in a season.
In a season, yeah.
They were elements that kept entire seasons connected in terms of narrative. And I'm wondering if, because we are accustomed to that, to what Discovery has done the first two seasons, one big myth arc and done for the season with closure, and then we move on to the next thing, that we're assuming the burn is going to be dealt with this season. And honestly, it's looking more and more like the burn is going to be something that we deal with for the next several seasons. It's going to be that underlying connection that brings all of our seasons together. I'm not saying we're going to go episodes or, you know, we're going to go multiple episodes without delving into it. But I think we're going to see Discovery deal with other issues, other problems. We're going to turn this show into a regular Star Trek show where it's not just only about one specific element.
And I think that's what Discovery has to do. They have to fully embrace being a Star Trek show. And that is one of the narrative elements that has always been in every single series of Star Trek,
yeah,
is where you have this multiple story elements being peppered in every single season. You don't know if it's going to be solved in this season. It might be in the next season or the following season.
Yeah.
They did that with the Borg. It was peppered throughout a season, and then they didn't come to actually fully deal with it till what? Like, I think it was like two seasons after that.
Right. Yeah.
That they finally had to deal with the Borg showing up. So, like, I'm with you. I'm seeing that basically I think the burn is going to be like an ongoing thing. We probably won't get it the end of it this season.
And do we really want it?
I don't feel
rushed.
Yeah.
The burn is this epic thing that destroyed the galaxy. Do we really want that resolved, the mystery? And also, how fucking of a farce would it feel like, in my opinion? And if – I'm not saying it can't work. Let's say they end up wrapping it up fine. I'm sure they can make it feel fine.
Fine.
But it's all about the writing.
Yes.
But my point is that – can you imagine if we – okay, so Federation has not been able to figure out what has happened in what, 500 years – 100 and some years?
Yeah, 100 and some years.
Okay. And then suddenly Discovery shows up. All right, we got this. We'll figure out in a week what you couldn't figure out in 150 years. It would feel a little weak. And even though they have a spore drive and they have more, you know, tools at their disposal, it would feel a little insincere, off. And that's why I'm thinking more and more that the burn is just going to be one of those things that they use as a MacGuffin for a while, just like the Dominion. Do you remember when the Dominion was first mentioned in Deep Space Nine? I believe it was first mentioned in season two. Then the Jem'Hadar was mentioned in season three. Then the Founders were introduced, I believe, in season four.
Season four.
And then suddenly we realize that the Founders, the Jem'Hadar, and the Dominion are all one.
Yes.
Then we find out that the shapeshifters are the Founders. This took years. And do you remember how sweet it was? Like, it was so much more enjoyable to give something doled out like that.
Yeah.
Rather than here's everything you need and we're going to wrap it up at the end of the season.
Especially like what you said, I mean, just a couple of seconds ago about Vance alluding to the fact that there's other threats out there that's actually battling the Federation and just hammering them right now that he has to deal with.
Yeah.
Like Burnham. And I like the fact that Burnham kind of like at first doesn't get it until later when she comes to realize that, yeah, there's other things going on in this time frame that have to be dealt with before they go jumping into the whole thing. Let's find what happened to the burn. Let's see if we can fix it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you've only been here for a year, and it's starting. You finally see it in this episode that she's starting to understand that there's other things going on around that's been destroying and decaying the Federation.
Right. Yeah, I like it, Dave.
I like it.
And I'm okay if the burn is just kind of something we delve into throughout the seasons. As long as we continue to learn a bit more, that's all.
Yeah.
That, along with the reclaiming of Federation planets, and this series is, I think, is going to be just fine. As long as that's the route we take. You know, give us episodes that are like almost like a hybrid, episodic and serial. Like, we definitely want to touch on the main myth arc, but we can also go do a mission.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with that, because we are in uncharted areas. There is so much that can be done with this series now. So many possibilities. All right, so Lieutenant Nilsen, as we mentioned a couple episodes ago, she came out of nowhere. But I do like her, Dave, but I need some clarification on her character.
Yeah.
Is she essentially third in command? Is she like the Data?
Yes, it does seem like it, doesn't
it? Third in command. Yeah,
she's third.
Is this the second time we've seen her take the bridge?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I like that.
I like it. I mean, we're finally getting to see, especially since the rest of the crew have settled into their roles. Now, a lot of people might be saying, well, when Saru's captain, he always seems to refer to Tilly. Why isn't Tilly the third in command? I'm not going, you guys do realize Tilly's an ensign.
How would Tilly be in command?
Yeah, Tilly wouldn't be in command. She's an ensign at this point.
She was only in command in the Terran universe.
Yeah, in her Killy role.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Tilly even said that she was like a dominatrix. I'm like, yeah,
you were. Yeah, you were.
You can dominatrix me. Hey! Hey!
But, like, that's what I actually really like, that we're finally getting to see this crew fully in action. We got everyone in their quote unquote stations. But the one thing that has not been really established is the fact that you have the captain, who is Saru. You have first in command, who is Burnham.
Right.
But who's the third in command?
I think it's Lieutenant Nilsen.
It has to be, yeah. Nilsen.
Yeah. Well, who's going to be security now? Head of security.
That's going to be interesting. Are we going to get a new character?
I wonder if Willa, you know, that new face, I think she was head of security of headquarters.
I'm thinking that might be the case.
I have to imagine that they're going to want to include some new crew.
What happens if, like, David Cronenberg, what happens if he becomes part of the Discovery crew?
Jeez, no, they need to save him.
That's
special.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Dave. So this does take us to the end of our show. We have run out of time. I was hoping we can get into some of the visual effects that I was talking about earlier in the show, and how careful and delicate a lot of these artists are being with before. Briefly, we should probably touch on a few Easter eggs. Voyager J.
Yes.
Fucking love it.
That was awesome, finding that out. And then finding the explanation.
What did they say, 10 generations of ships? Is what she said? We had the USS Nog.
Which I think that got me in the feels.
Now, do you think that's a real thing, or do you think that's just simply, hey, guys, little Easter egg and a little nod?
I think that's a thing, especially since, if you think about it, in Deep Space Nine, Nog was a huge moment in Star Trek.
Naming because, a ship, though, after a person?
Because he was the first Ferengi to ever be included in Star Trek, the first ever.
Well, I'm anxious now to find out about Nog's history. Like, what did he become? Did he become one of the greats?
If it's up to Ira, he probably died.
It might have also been just a little bit of a tribute to the actor that died.
Yeah.
Aaron Eisenberg,
yeah.
We'll get into the ship stuff during a later show.
Because there's so much, dude. There's so much going on.
There's so much. But I am 100%. Happy with the designs of the ships. I like the inclusion of the holographic hulls. It's a little strange. I will say it's a little strange.
I'm trying to figure out, how does that work?
Well, what if someone takes out the hologrid or the holomatrix, whatever it is. Like, the whole ship falls apart, people die.
That's what I was like, why would you do that?
Never mind shields. Get the hologram system going again. Computer, please don't end program. We'll all die. All right, Dave. Final thoughts briefly in about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Final thoughts on this one. This episode is my favorite up to this point. Such it has my favorite cameo. It has one of my favorite moments in Discovery so far. If I were to give it a score, I'm giving it a 98. It's a really great episode. I think that if you're hating on Discovery still, you're just hating because you're looking for it.
You got used to it.
You got used to it. You
found comfort in that hate.
If you just take a step back and just watch Discovery for the crew, don't think about like everybody else. Don't think about Enterprise. Don't think about Voyager. Don't think about Deep Space Nine or even like the TNG crew. Just focus on the fact that we're getting a brand new crew for this generation.
Yeah.
That's it. It's really good. I really think that people should give it a shot.
You think you're convincing anyone right now? They're probably like,
I hope.
The moment we said we liked it, they probably signed out.
The power.
I only want to listen to Nerdbot talk shit all the time.
The power of hope and optimism.
All right. I'll give this episode a 96%. It's probably the strongest episode of the season so far. We're getting to that point now where it's kind of like anyone's guess when each episode is good. Like, when do you stop saying, well, this episode's better? Because right now I'm still there. I'm right there with you. Like, this is the best episode of the season. But when we get to episode 9, episode 10, and we're going to keep saying that. I mean, objectively, it's a 96%. Forget being a Star Trek fan as a critic. It's a 96%. It's written well. It's plotted out correctly. They're using literary gimmicks that work. They're using things that progress the plot. The cinematography is fucking stunning. The visual effects is gorgeous. The attention to detail is on point. The scene between Georgiou and Kovich is some of the best acting moments we've ever had in Star Trek Discovery. It's subtle. It's all nuance. It's fantastic. So 96%. This does bring us to the end of our discussion. I want to thank everybody for listening. And also, please, if you love our show, you enjoy our show, and you want to, you know, give us a little bit of a boost, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital, and pledge. When you pledge $3 or more a month, you'll gain access to our behind-the-scenes shows, which is, for Star Trek specifically, you're looking at numerous pre-shows that we do before every single broadcast. And with the $5 tier, you gain access to additional podcast discussions ranging from comic book reviews, specialty discussions on the Maquis, the Soong family, the Borg. It goes on and on. We've been doing these shows for quite some time. So you pledge and you gain access to literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of additional content. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.